We're only about 6 months away from the cross, or less, in Matthew chapter 16. Christ's life is soon going to be handed over to the authorities. He's soon going to see his disciples leave. And he's soon going to be hung from a cross. And this morning we remember that sacrifice. We remember Christ laying down his life. We remember his body broken and the blood poured out and the bread and the wine that we'll take here shortly. And Christ had to think about that, as here in Matthew 16, when he would deal with the Pharisees and Sadducees, when he would try to teach his disciples. In the back of his mind, he'd be thinking he only had a short time left. And you wonder how frustrating it would have been to him dealing with the Pharisees and Sadducees, knowing that he only had a short time left. And here's a group of people that just will not believe. They continue to try to trap him with questions, and they continue to try to set up some scenario that he won't be able to answer or get out of. And then they soon find out that Christ has the perfect answer for their question. And then they'll go right back to the drawing board to try to trap him again. You just wonder how frustrating that would be to Christ. But even through it all, what was really remarkable to me as I spent time reading through Matthew 16 in preparation for this exhortation is the focus that Christ had for his ecclesial family, for his disciples. It was something that really was remarkable to me, because here he has to deal with a group of people there that are trying to trap him. And then right afterwards, he tries to teach his disciples a lesson. And the disciples don't quite get it in the moment. And Christ has to break it down for him and say, hey, I'm trying to teach you a lesson about the Pharisees and Sadducees. But what I found so remarkable is that Christ never gives up on his disciples. No matter the situation, no matter whether they understand or don't, he's always there to help them. You know, if you think about it, if you were only 6 months away from dying, and you had to spend all your time with your disciples, and you're trying to teach them just a few lessons, and they're not getting it. You know, for me, it's tough. I got into accounting because I don't always like to deal with people. I like to just hide in my office and punch numbers in a computer and spend 8 hours at the office and go home. But here Christ has to spend every moment with a group teaching and instructing. And, you know, he might have got a little bit frustrated with him, but he never gives up. And it's a great testament to our ecclesial life. You know, us as an ecclesial whole, we try to get along, we try to get together. We have all different kinds of personalities, different things going on in our family life. But we're all trying to mesh. We're all striving for the same goal. And we're all trying to get along. And it's a great lesson when we look at Christ and how he never gave up on the ecclesial family. No matter the situation, no matter the circumstances, he kept trying. And I think that's a great lesson for us. So in Matthew 16, you know, you just wonder, even if Jesus gave the Pharisees and Sadducees a sign from heaven, would it even have made a difference to them? Their malicious attitude toward Christ had clouded their vision of a sign that was right before their eyes. Christ stood right before them, and they still desired a sign from heaven, even though the whole time the sign was right before their eyes. Christ had performed miracles. He had healed the sick. He had fed the hungry. I mean, just two chapters back, Christ had fed the 5,000. With 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And still this group asked for a sign. And you got to remember, at this time, there wasn't text messages or emails or stuff like that to pass along to people about what was going on. People at this time were extremely good at storytelling. And I can guarantee you that when Christ would have fed the 5,000, that would have spread. People at this day and age were extremely good at remembering and telling stories. So some of the Pharisees and Sadducees, they would have heard about this. They would have known of the miracles of Christ. They would have known what he had done. But they still wanted a sign. They still wouldn't believe. And then Christ, he gives them the same answer he gave them back in Matthew chapter 12, verse 39. Christ told them, "But he answered and said unto them, an evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given to it but the sign of the prophet Jonas." So he answers them the same way. He gives them the same answer when they try to trap him again. They just constantly want a sign, but I just don't think it would have changed a thing for them. And you know, we too have to be careful in our life when we desire some clear sign. There's times when we face things in our life, when we come against trials and difficulties, and we want something clear. We want some clear sign from heaven. We want something to prove our faith. Obviously, our intentions are not like the Pharisees and Sadducees. We want to make that clear. But there are times where we want some sign. But the whole time we're desiring that, we have to remember that God is working in the nations. He's working in our ecclesia. I mean, think about it. We have, I don't know, 80, 100, over 100 plus people here together, working together. That's not easy. And God has sustained it year after year. He's blessed this ecclesia. He has molded it and kept it together right before our eyes. That's a sign from heaven. And then just a few verses after Christ deals with the Pharisees and Sadducees, Christ later has to correct the disciples as they were confused on his teachings. The disciples thought Christ was talking about them not having bread. And then they come to realize he is warning them about the teachings of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And it's a very important lesson for the disciples to learn, because the Pharisees and Sadducees asked Christ some very tough questions. They tested Christ. They tempted him, seeing how he would respond to their traps. And you have to just imagine that Christ would have been a little bit worried for his disciples, because who always answered the tough questions when Christ was with his disciples? It was always Christ. Whenever the Pharisees and Sadducees came together to trick somebody, it was always a question towards Christ. And you could just imagine how worried Christ would be for his disciples, because in 6 months or less, Christ would be gone. And now the disciples would have to answer the questions of the Pharisees and Sadducees. It would be them that would be tested. And now Christ, after spending 3 years with the disciples, he begins to ask them some questions. He begins to pick their brain. "Whom do men say that I am?" The disciples, they all kind of respond with some mixed answers. And then Christ directly asks them, "Whom say ye that I am?" Peter confidently answers Christ, identifying Christ as the Son of the living God. Son of the living God. Peter was right. And Christ let him know it. Christ said, "Blessed art thou." And then just a little bit later on in Matthew 16, I'm just going to pick up a few verses on how Christ responds to Peter saying that. In verse 17, "And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. I say unto you also, and I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon the rock I will build my ecclesia, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." And you can imagine, after 3 years of being with Christ, that the disciples would pay very close attention when Christ mentioned the word kingdom. I think this would be a key word for them. I think this is a teaching they had picked up on from Christ. When Christ said, "And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be loosed in heaven," "bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." I think they paid really close attention to those words that Christ said in that moment. Because you have to wonder, after being with Christ for this long and his teachings about the kingdom, his teachings about what is to come, they would settle into the disciples' minds. It's possible that the disciples might think that they were on the verge of seeing Christ set up the kingdom. It's very possible they wanted to see that here and now. They must have thought that Christ was going to set up the kingdom right before their eyes at any moment during his ministry. In Matthew 18, in verse 1, we can find that the disciples thought about the kingdom. It was something that was in the front of their minds. In Matthew 18, verse 1, the disciples asked Christ, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" The thought of the kingdom was on the disciples' minds. They must have thought Christ was going to set up the kingdom soon. In Matthew 20, verses 20 and 21, James and John's mother ask if her sons can be seated on the right hand and the other on the left hand of Christ. The disciples had given thought to the kingdom. They had given a lot of thought to the kingdom. You wouldn't just randomly come up with, "Well, maybe, you know, is my son going to be on the right hand and on the left?" You wouldn't just randomly come up with that question without a lot of thought about the kingdom. The disciples had given the kingdom a lot of thought. They were ready for it here and now, and they thought it was going to come here and now. But something unexpected is going to happen in just a few verses. Probably not what the disciples expected. Christ in Matthew 16, verse 21 says, From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how they must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Now you have to stop for a minute and think about the disciples' reaction in this moment. You know, I tried to picture their faces when they would have heard this message from Christ. These would definitely not have been the words you have wanted to hear as a disciple from Christ. Suffer, killed, raised. The thoughts about the kingdom would quickly dash from their mind as they listened to the message from Christ. They would have shot glances around at each other, wondering if they heard Christ correctly. Thinking, "Wait a minute, what? Suffer, kill, death? This is not in our plans. We're ready for the kingdom now." They would have been wondering, "What does Christ have in store for us? What are we getting ourselves into? What's going to happen in Jerusalem?" And Peter speaks up for the group. Peter seems to be the one that normally speaks up for the group. And I'm going to read these verses from Matthew 16 from the NIV. I'm going to read verse 22. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." The disciples had relied heavily upon Christ. I'm very confident that they expected to see the kingdom in their lifetime. Christ had answered all the difficult questions up to this point for the disciples. Christ had provided for the disciples up to this point as well. I don't think the disciples understood a life without Christ at this point. And then Christ rebukes Peter. Verse 23, "But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." Christ goes right on to speak to all the disciples what would be required of them to follow him. In the next section of verses, starting around verse 24, then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? If the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. Christ uses this section of verses to teach the disciples what is required of them to be a disciple of Christ. The disciples must continue to deny themselves, deny their own will, their own desires and wants to follow after Christ. They must be willing to put the flesh to death. And then Christ continues to challenge his disciples. Christ had done this before, challenging the disciples. The challenge would be particularly hard to follow right after Christ, after he delivered the statement about sufferings, being killed and put to death. You know, if you heard those three words, you wouldn't be very eager to follow after somebody. There's going to be sufferings, killed, and death. It's a challenge Christ laid out to his disciples. Pick up your cross and follow me. Christ's words to the disciples are easy to understand, but difficult to live because of the fleshly nature we all have. If you remember back to the beginning of Christ's ministry, he had large groups that would follow him. Back in Matthew 4:25, Matthew 4:25 says, and there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee and from Decapolis and from Jerusalem and from Judea and from beyond Jordan. So there was large groups that would follow Christ and his ministry, his teachings. And in John 6, we find that Christ challenged those that followed him, just like he did in Matthew 16. Granted, John 6 is a little bit more complex to understand than Matthew 16 because of the analogy Christ is speaking in. So if you flip over to John 6, we find that it's not uncommon for Christ to challenge those that would follow him, that would believe upon him. John 6, and it's a long section here. I'll get through it. John 6:45-66. And it is written to the prophets, and they shall be all taught of God. Every man, therefore, that hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man has seen the Father, save that which is of God, and he hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. The Jews thereof strove among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? Then said Jesus unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father has sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead, but that eateth of the bread shall live forever. These things said he in the synagogue, as he taught in Capernaum. Many therefore of his disciples, when they had heard this, said, this is a hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto him, doth this offend you? What and if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before? Is this the spirit that quickeneth the flesh profiteth nothing? Or excuse me, is it It is the Spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not and who should betray him. And he said, therefore, I say unto you that no man come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. So when Christ challenges his disciples here in John 6, many of them left him. They turned around and no longer would follow him. So it's not a foreign teaching for Christ to challenge his disciples. And back in Matthew 16, the teachings of Christ in Matthew 16 would not have been completely foreign. They were all called out by Jesus 3 years prior. They all had some occupation, they all had family, they all had friends and daily routines. But one day, 3 years ago, Christ came to them and required of them to leave everything behind and follow him. In Matthew 9 and 9, it says, and Jesus passed forth from thence and saw a man named Matthew sitting in the receipt of custom. And he said unto him, follow me. And he arose and followed him. The same thing in Matthew 8. Matthew 8, verses 19 to 23. And a certain scribe came and said unto him, Master, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. And Jesus said unto him, the foxes have holes and the birds of air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. And another of his disciples said unto him, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. But Jesus said unto him, follow me, and let the dead bury their dead. And when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. So this teaching that Christ had laid out before the disciples that would challenge them is nothing new. Christ just 3 years prior had called the 12 disciples out. They were to leave their family, their friends, everything behind to follow after Christ. This teaching in Matthew 16 and 24, the following out would remind them and recall in their memories the day that they had decided to leave everything behind. The disciples had firsthand experience already at following Christ. They had done it for over 3 years now, and in only a few months would change. This would all change for the disciples. For the last 3 years, they had the opportunity to serve Christ side by side. But in only a few months, they would be without Christ. He would be crucified, and 40 days later, or 40 days after his resurrection, he would ascend to heaven. So the challenge for them to go forth and to teach and preach, it would become very difficult. It would be a challenge without Christ. At this point in Matthew 16, all that they had known to this point was Christ by their side, helping and aiding them, encouraging them and challenging them, providing for them, praying for them. So as we look through Matthew 16, I want to just throw out a few applications for you and I to think about in this week. The challenge that Christ has laid out for his disciples is easy to read and understand. The difficult part is living it. We can sit here this morning and think, the exhortation is just on following me, just on that one little verse. That's the challenge you brought for us, David. But I can guarantee you it's extremely hard to live. Often you and I think about the kingdom and we desire for it now. There's nothing more in this world we could want than to see Christ. But we have to be patient. There will be difficulties in our life. We might have our focus on one thing. For the disciples, it was most likely the kingdom here in Matthew 16. When they were speaking with Christ, or when Christ was speaking and teaching with them. And then God would have a completely different plan for us. For the disciples, it was when Christ told them that, look, I'm going to have to be crucified. We need to be willing to accept how God works in our life. There is nothing wrong with talking, thinking, desiring, or wanting the kingdom to be established now. But we must be willing to grow each day in patience and faith. What we want now is not always what God has planned for us today. We have to realize things will happen in our life that we won't understand now or even want to deal with right now. Life can be complex, stressful, a rat race. It can be disheartening. It can be confusing. But through it all, we must have faith that God in some way is changing and improving who we are by what he puts in our life. James 5, verses 7 through 8, we could actually read the whole chapter, but we're not. We're just going to pick up a few verses. James 5, a lot, picks up about faith and patience. And I think it's something good to think about this morning. James 5, verses 7 through 8. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. The requirements for discipleship remains the same for you and I as it did for the disciples. We must be willing to learn from a straightforward lesson presented by Christ. Because let's admit it, some of the most straightforward lessons Christ presents can be hard to put into practice in our life. That's something we have to practice every day that we have. The reason being is because the lessons required for us is to change. Being willing to follow Christ, being willing to pick up our cross, it requires us to change. It requires us to sacrifice, to put yourself second, to follow. And depending on your personality, that can be extremely difficult to follow. To teach, to help, to love, to give. Most of these items listed do not come naturally to you and I. Christ desired his disciples to deny themselves, to take up his cross and follow me, Matthew 16 and 24, and this same applies to you and I. Let's take one quick example from Mark 10. Mark 10, verses 17 through 25. Many of us know this story as the rich man who came to Christ. And he says, "Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said unto him, Why call us thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal. Verse 20, and he answered and said unto him, Master, all these I have observed from my youth. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him and said unto him, One thing thou lackest, go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast, give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. Come, take up the cross and follow me. Christ instructs the rich man to leave behind the one thing that held him back from following Christ. Discipleship requires us to change. This example teaches us that we, too, probably, like the rich man, do well in many areas of our spiritual life. But God wants us to change those few areas that we struggle with. He wants us to examine our spiritual weaknesses and work on them. Kind of reminds us of 1 Corinthians 11 and 28, but let a man examine himself. Being a disciple requires patience and faith in God to deliver all that he has promised to those that will live a life following his son's commandments and following after the commandment of Matthew 16 and 24, picking up your cross and following him. Making a daily conscious decision to live this life will lead to us seeing the fulfillment of the end of Matthew 16. Matthew 16 and 27 says, For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. That's why we pick up our cross every day. That's why we make a conscious decision every day to follow after Christ. As we remember Christ through the bread and the wine, let's realize that through his sacrifice, we have hope to be found worthy at his second coming. when he comes in his glory that was stated in Matthew 16 and 27. We will find opportunity to eat and drink anew with Christ when he comes in this glory. So when we take of these emblems, let's think about that. Let's think about the challenge that Christ has left for us, the same one he left for his disciples. Pick up your cross and follow me. It sounds so simple, but yet it requires every day of our life dedicated to that purpose. When we do that, I think Matthew 26, verse 29, and Luke 22, verse 16 become a reality. And that's what I'll leave you with this morning. Matthew 26, verse 29, "But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Luke 22 and 16, "For I say unto you, I will not eat any more thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God."